Good morning. The date is February 13th, 2020, and you are listening to episode 4 of Coronavirus Central, your daily source for information about the novel coronavirus of 2019, now called COVID-2019 or COVID-19 pandemic. I am your host, Tom Kaczynski, and we will offer tracking about the number of cases, vital information about the outbreak, major developments, economic implication, stories of what's happening around the net, and helpful advice to protect you and your family. As always, this podcast represents the combined efforts of a public open source information network, which we invite you to join. Consider joining us at Telegram at t.me/coronaviruscentral. The podcasts are being hosted at corona.castos.com. And any information, questions, or tips can be sent to coronaviruscentral@pm.me. We are an independent organization working to find the truth internationally and for the safety of all against this terrible pandemic. Thank you for listening. So it's about 8 a.m. on, what is this, Thursday morning here on the U.S. East Coast, up here in Maine where it's snowing. And we've got a lot to cover today, so this is going to be a very dense, information-packed episode. We've had a major jump on some numbers, so today's episode, we're going to really make an effort to look at why the numbers jumped. We're going to look at what we are learning about the coronavirus, about COVID, and we'll see what is useful in that. But what we are, as a preview to the episode, what we're going to end up talking about is that we have good reason to expect the infectivity is higher than reported, the incubation period is longer, and we're going to have to talk about the quarantine lengths being used because there is an increasing probability that the original quarantines, given how short they were, may not have been fully effective. And we'll look at that in some nations that border China or have heavy transit, especially in East Asia, because I think the implications will be important, not just in terms of what was spreading, but also to give you an idea of other vectors from which the worldwide spread of this pandemic may continue. And then we'll have a little tip at the end to make this a little better for you. So I'm very excited that the show is now available on Spotify. It's available on iTunes and on Google Play. So we're going to try to have this show up every day, excepting perhaps Sundays, just so I can get a little bit of a break because it's deep and there's a lot to go into. And we always encourage people to share information with us. Come into the Telegram group. It's very helpful if you don't like that. Once again, like I said, we have the number, or excuse me, not the number, the email at coronaviruscentral.pm.me. So definitely make sure you get us information. So let's go into the numbers here. And we're going to use the same site we've been using, WuFlu Live. They've now adopted a new URL in alignment with the changing name. So it's now COVID19info.live. But if you type in WuFlu Live, if you remember that better, it'll take you to the same place. And the numbers, and this is this update. In fact, I'll refresh it right now so we can have as updated as possible. This is as of 7:08 a.m. on the East Coast, so about an hour ago. And we shouldn't be expecting any more updates until later today because the big numbers are going to come in from China. As of right now, the confirmed cases has jumped to 60,400. And just to put that in perspective, as of yesterday, it was 44,730. So that's a jump of over, it looks like, 15,000 we see worldwide. And the Chinese number itself is about 14,100 of that. We've seen the deaths jump to 1,370. And for China, with respect to the number of deaths, let's see if I can find this here. Well, that number isn't available that way. Okay, well, that was a jump of about 200. I know that because I was looking at it elsewhere. So we're up to 1,370, and we're up to 6,244 recoveries, which is good to know, although that's still a very troubling number. So those are your most updated numbers in this, and we are anticipating, and the Chinese government is saying that they are adopting a new reporting scheme where we expect numbers to go up markedly. So to cover that part of it, we're going to start with an article from Xinhua.net, and all these articles will be posted on the corona.castos.com site. And if I can ever get the URL forwarding to work, that'll be what happens when you see Coronavirus Central. But bookmark the site, and that way you can look at it every day if there are articles you want more details on. But this one, I'm going to read most of it just because I think it will be useful, and it really changes the way a lot of these numbers are being recorded. So the article reads, and this, the source of this is Xinhua, and the editor is Hua Shi, if I'm pronouncing that right. You have to forgive me. My Chinese is not great. China's Hubei reports jump in new cases of COVID-19 after diagnosis criteria revision. And this was released today. I apologize, February 13th. China's Hubei province, center of the novel coronavirus outbreak, reported 14,840 new confirmed cases and 242 new deaths on Wednesday, the highest daily increases so far, local health authorities said Thursday. The Hubei Provincial Health Commission said the number of new cases included 13,332 clinically diagnosed cases, which have been seen as confirmed cases from Thursday. It brought the total confirmed cases in the hard-hit province to 48,206. The province had a total of 1,310 deaths as of Wednesday. Clinically diagnosed cases are unique to Hubei statistically. The inclusion of those cases drives the surge in the number of new confirmed cases. And just let me interject here that they have been reporting that they're going to begin rolling out this new criteria nationwide. So expect another jump today based on this criteria being applied nationally and hopefully internationally, because there is a shortage of test kits that, as reported yesterday on this podcast, and as Japan was saying, their health ministries experiencing, as well as another story, which we're not going to cover, but the CDC in the United States was saying a number of the health test kits they already sent out are faulty. So I wouldn't put too much faith into testing other than, you know, seeing how there's a widespread of these things. So let's continue. Any suspected cases with pneumonia-related computerized tomography, CT scan, results are counted as clinically diagnosed cases according to the latest version of the diagnosis and treatment scheme released by the National Health Commission. The Provincial Health Commission said the diagnosis criteria revision has been made to give those who have been clinically diagnosed the timely standard treatment of confirmed cases to further improve the treatment success rate. And that's about 3 weeks on average in the hospital, anywhere from a week, from 10 days to 3 weeks, especially for those severe cases, just to put some context there. The province also saw 3,441 patients discharged from hospital after recovery as of Wednesday. Amongst the 33,693 hospitalized patients, 5,647 were still in severe condition and another 1,437 in critical condition. So you think of the number of people who are in the hospital, we're talking about 34,000 roughly, and what we are seeing is that approximately 7,000 are in pretty bad shape. And there's another thing that you need to keep in mind here, which was the two days ago we were reporting, NTD News was covering through an investigation they did with the funeral homes, a number of people who were dying from different locations. And the official for the Chinese party who worked at the funeral homes, it's a little different to have your party officials be managing your funeral homes compared to what we do in the West. But, you know, in a state-run society, things are a little different over there. They were saying that 60% of the deaths of the bodies being brought there were being brought directly from houses and residences to the hospital. So if you keep that in mind, just keep that in the back of your mind while we're talking about these numbers, because it's probably relevant. So assuming that that number is accurate, which we don't independently know, but let's just, I think it is reasonable to conclude that when people are locked in their homes and can't leave, people are getting sick at home. So if there's 33,000 patients and that represents maybe, I don't know, let's call it a third of the people who are out there, then there's probably another 60-some thousand at a minimum who are in their houses who are sick. And perhaps that number could be much larger because obviously while there's a finite number of hospitals that people can go to, there is a much greater housing capacity. And so we don't know what the actual numbers are. And I just say this because we don't, it's not perhaps the most useful thing to speculate what the actual numbers are. We have sources now from China that are reporting that this the actual death and infection numbers are orders of magnitude. Miles Guo on the pandemic war room had suggested the other day that there were 1.5 million people infected with as many as 50,000 dead. We personally have a source from a major Chinese Telegram group that's suggesting that the death toll is already into the six figures. We have no way to confirm that, but these are what people are saying on the ground. And given the number of people that we just can't know about, the one thing that is true, even as China is as responsibly raising their numbers upward, I think that we have to be very careful in assuming that these numbers are close to reality. And the reason why is a little more complicated too, but people who've done some of the statistical modeling based on some of the numbers we're about to discuss with infectivity, transmission, and lethality rates would suggest that given the size of these quarantines, the number of people impacted, that the numbers should actually be considerably higher than this, and that a large reason of why there is the suppression of the actual fatality rates is twofold. The first part and the largest being the economic implications. And if you have a non-functioning economic system, the ability to provide treatment will be gone, and that they're trying to prevent a worldwide panic, which is an understandable goal in many ways. But, you know, here at Coronavirus Central, we try to give you information, trusting that you have the ability to intelligently assess what's going on. And we know it's a small podcast for people who really care to get in front of it, and we'll have the credibility as time goes forward by trying to give you better information. And the second thing is the Chinese Communist Party, from the beginning of this, has made a concerted effort to understate how bad this was for reasons of internal stability. And that also sadly is comprehensible, but the time has passed thinking this is a single problem for one country. We have to see this as the global pandemic it is, and that'll become clearer as we go through the show. So we talked a little bit about the Xinhua statistics in terms of the numbers that are out there, and that article is available at xinhua.net. We'll put up a link for it. Xinhuanet.com is the website for English speakers. And if you speak Mandarin, maybe you let us know if it says the same thing in Chinese. All right, so I want to share another study with you. So we're going to talk a little bit about the infectivity of this disease and why that draws to question why the numbers could perhaps be more pronounced than they've been. So this is from MedRxiv, which is it's an international web page, I should say, for medical papers. And this is something that has been around for a little bit from some of these people who are recognized scientists. So I want to share these names. These are from some people who were working, I think, with Los Alamos, if I remember right. So, and this is from Steven Sanch, Yenting Ling, Shangguan Xu, Ethan Romero Severson, and Nick Hengartner at Ruyan Key, and these are all members. So this has not been peer-reviewed, but I want to read the abstract, and it goes like this. And we'll put this up. This is public knowledge, and you can see the bona fides of the people all involved, legitimate medical professionals and statisticians as well, working in concert to try to figure out some solutions. And for those who don't know American areas, Los Alamos is the National Energy Laboratory, a lot of government resources out there. Okay, so the novel coronavirus, 2019 nCoV, is highly contagious and more infectious than initially estimated. And just put it out there, this article is from February 7th, so that's a week ago. But the abstract, the novel coronavirus is recently emerged human pathogen that has spread widely since January 2020. Initially, the basic reproductive number, the R-naught, was estimated to be 2.2 to 2.7. Here, we provide a new estimate of this quantity. We collected extensive individual case reports and estimated key epidemiology parameters, including the incubation period. Integrating these estimates and high-end resolution real-time human travel and infection data with mathematical models, we estimated that the number of infected individuals during early epidemic double every 2.4 days, and that the R-naught value is likely to be between 4.7 and 6.6. We further show that quarantine and contact tracing of symptomatic individuals alone may not be effective, and early strong control measures are needed to stop the transmission of this virus. So let me go into what that's actually saying in a little more detail so you understand. So the R-naught number, as we described, is basically the number of people who will be infected by a sick individual, a carrier of the virus. And so what they're saying is, instead of a person being infected to 2.5 people on average, they're saying that number is somewhere between 4.7 and 6.6. That's aligned with what we've seen based on the numbers that are being reported, based on the progression that we've seen on the Diamond Princess, that's the cruise ship, and based on what we are starting to see in early information come out of Singapore. So just to put that in real quick relief for you, if the number of infected individuals doubles during the early epidemic, okay, at 2.4 days, that's saying in the absence of quarantine measures, that's really what that means, where people don't know any better. Let's just use an R, or let's go ahead and use the value of 5 just to put in relief for you, because you can do this yourself by just, it's the R-naught value multiplied times the incubation period that will determine the theoretical spread of the disease. So we're going to assume, for the sake of this scenario, that the disease doubles every 2 days, and that the value is 5. And we're just doing that to make this easy for the math way. So on day 1, you're going to have 5 people infected. Day 3, 25. Day 5, 125. Day 7, 625. Day 9, 3,125. Day 11, 15,625. Day 13, 78,125. And then day 15, 390,625. And that's using a sort of median value. It was slightly faster in the accounting, but I used a smaller R-naught value just to make the numbers work better. That's the sort of progression. So basically in 2 weeks, if this projection is right, and this is based on the numbers being reported, which we know might not be as aggressive as actually true, given that we have evidence now that this disease is aerosolized, it can be breathed into the air, it's spread through droplets, fecal transmission, other different ways it can go, and that we have evidence as well that it can last on surfaces for as long as 9 days. And just as a reminder to everyone listening, clean your hands, please. Wash your hands frequently. Don't touch your face. Wash surfaces. Heat helps. You want to use soap. Don't count on hand sanitizer to save you. And if you are in a high-risk area, and by that I mean any urban area at this point, you really need to be considering personal protection. That's at least an N95 mask. I know there are a lot of rumors out there about the N95s not necessarily being sufficient to block the virus. But remember, if the virus is spreading on droplets, then that will block it. If, in fact, it is spreading on aerosolization, you may need to get an N99 or N100. You're going to have to look hard to find those. If you're in the U.S., I recommend hardware stores. There's still some local ones that have that, and you probably have about a week before you can before that avenue closes off. But so returning to the question of what this means in terms of spread, what it means is we're going to have clusters. So anywhere you have one person get infected, you would expect within a week to see a number of people infected, potentially in the hundreds around that one person. And this is a real problem because, as it said in the abstract, is that the contact tracing of symptomatic individuals alone may not be effective. And the reason why that's worth talking about is because what we have observed is that there is a long period of where people are not necessarily infective, where they don't know they're sick. They're spreading the virus, usually at the highest level, right before they show the first symptoms of coronavirus, which tend to be fever and coughing, and which, as we also know, can easily be mistaken for any number of other respiratory infections, including influenza, a common cold, you name it. There's a lot of different things. So by the time that people actually become aware of what they have, how many people have they spread this to? And that's why quarantine measures, even though they should be enacted for areas which are primarily healthy, in a lot of ways, are not going to be effective in keeping things out. The only way that we believe, or at least I believe, this could be effective is if you have everyone shut in and shut the borders long enough to keep this from spreading. And for economic reasons, people aren't going to do that. But we're gonna go ahead and expand on the important work here. And I recommend that people take a look at the details of this this research, and we'll put the PDF up for you so you have the opportunity to read that in detail. It definitely goes into some of the deeper epidemiology, and you need to see this, because what you need to realize is this is spreading really fast. But the thing that makes it really scary and should scare us all is that it doesn't manifest quickly, and that's what our next article is about. And this is from the Straits Times, and it's also another article that's coming from MedRxiv, but I use this just to give you the summary of it, and this was reported by, like I said, this is the Straits Times. We'll link the article, but they actually grabbed this from the China Daily News Network, and what it says is, research shows a 3-day median incubation period for coronavirus, up to 24 days in rare cases, right? So the median incubation period of the coronavirus is 3 days, while in rare cases, the incubation period can reach 24 days, recent research has found. The median incubation period of 3 days is lower than the estimated 5.2 days, according to research conducted by Dr. Zhang Nanshan, a prominent scientist who is leading a government-appointed panel of experts to control the coronavirus outbreak. We'll just skip through here that I'm just skipping over a couple things here. It was published on Sunday, but it has not been peer reviewed yet because people, and these things are in the process of being peer reviewed for those concerned about that. It's just a matter of the time and the speed that people are working because of the intensity of the outbreak. So this research was based upon a sample of 1,099 coronavirus patients selected from 552 hospitals across China with a median age of 47. And 44% of them were in Wuhan. And the pathogen's fatality rate was rated at 0.88%. I don't know if that's the case fatality rate, which I'm going to assume it is the number of people who get it who die, or conversely, if it's going to be the mortality rate, which will be very much smaller. But that's just based on the numbers that are being reported. We don't know if that's actually accurate. We'll see. I mean, from what I've seen out there, that would be very much a low end. But it's important more for this that the thing that's really important is that tail, that there are 24 days in rare cases. So people can have this for a very long time and be infective without knowing it. I've seen another study where it was reported that there was between the onset of when someone was around this and that they manifest 42 days. So there are probably asymptomatic carriers going around spreading this without any knowledge or awareness, and some of them are going to be people who have a very light manifestation of the disease, as we talked about yesterday. As much as 80% of the people who get this coronavirus only experience it as relatively mild symptoms and then recover. And then that ends up leading to them spreading it without knowing they ever had this sickness. And for those who want to know who are at higher risk, it does appear that the East Asians do have a somewhat higher elevated risk for infectivity based upon the ACE2 protein entrance that ends up happening, how this actually binds to the lower respiratory system. But that ultimately, once people get sick, everyone is equally vulnerable except for their comorbidities, diabetes, respiratory infections, asthma, older people, anyone with a weakened immune response. Although there are examples we know as well, potentially, there's a lot of research out there that people with an overwhelming immune response actually sometimes get sick, as there have been young, healthy people who die, and that's called a cytokine storm. It's sort of a complicated concept, but what it basically says is the body gets so vigorous in fighting the infection, it actually ends up harming itself. And we'll talk about that more in future days if the evidence warrants it. But it's certainly something to become familiar with as you're doing your own research, which you should be doing. I'm trying to do a lot to help and give you some pointers, but we'll go from there. So Now, this is another article. This is from the Straits Times as well. And we're using a lot of things out of Singapore because Singapore is a country uniquely Western in orientation despite having a Asian population. And so a lot of the information coming out, they're really trying to get in front of it because they have to as a center of global finance. And they are struggling, but they're trying to do a really good job. And it's giving us more information than we've been able to get so far from China. So right now, it's the World Health Organization, this article says, coronavirus, no change to recommended quarantine period despite a study suggesting a 24-day incubation, says the World Health Organization. And that's actually really important because everywhere that they've been looking, they've been putting down these 14-day quarantines, including people brought into the United States who were taken to the various military bases. I believe that there were some at Travis Air Force Base out by San Francisco, and there were some in Lackland Air Force Base, I want to say, by San Antonio. But wherever they were, everyone's on these 14-day quarantines, and that seems to be or has been up to now a global standard. However, what we are learning, and we see it once again going back to the Diamond Princess and the progression of the rates there, is that a 14-day quarantine period may be letting people slip through. We may have an incomplete understanding of just how effective this is, and that ultimately you could end up with a case where someone is quarantined for 14 days, has been exposed, and then manifest 20 days later, in which case the quarantine ends up being ineffective. It's literally like walking up to a border gate and just waiting for the place to close and then walking over the fence. And that's what we're dealing with. And I know people don't like the idea of extended quarantines, and we can have a conversation about their efficacy. I think at this point, it's going to be difficult to quarantine. You're almost stuck quarantining yourself in rather than anyone out. But this is the problem you have, and that with the coronavirus, that you could end up having these issues. And one of the interesting things here that was mentioned, and this was from the World Health Organization in this article we're talking about, Dr. Michael Ryan, executive director of the World Health Organization Health Emergencies Program, told a press conference on Monday that outliers need to be looked at very carefully, adding that long incubation periods could be due to a double exposure. So for those who don't really see what that means, which the suggestion there is that you can get this twice. And they said the first exposure may be assumed to have led to the infection, but it's possible the person did not catch the virus then, but instead got it from a second exposure at a later time. And I've had a number of people ask me, if you get this, what immunity does it convey? Do you get antibodies as you do with other things? And as of right now, it's too early to say, but the initial evidence, given the novelty of this this virus event, is that there is no unlimited immunity. There may be a period where your heightened immune response provides a degree of protection. We really don't have a lot of research on that. I mean, basic virology being what it is, you probably have a little bit of a break afterwards. But if your body doesn't learn how to block this and it gets re-exposed, especially for people who are at risk for different health conditions to begin with, it's a reasonable precaution we need to take to assume that you can get coronavirus more than once. And that is an area of personal concern, because one of the things that happens with viral pneumonia is that you end up with this issue where there can be lung damage that happens. And that is one thing that is really troubling, because if you keep getting this here over and over again, how much repeated damage will you do? You have something that's called ground glass opacity, which basically is your lungs get scarred from the fact that it gets filled with fluid. In the same way, if you kind of think of like a water line along the edge of a pool, how there's kind of like that sediment that forms there, it's not too different realistically from how that works, in the sense that you end up with your lungs having faced this trauma, faced this damage, either need time to heal or could have permanent damage, as would any inflammation or scarring. And so it's definitely a concern what the recurrence of coronavirus will do in these first days of this outbreak, this pandemic. We don't really know the answers to these questions, but I think there are things that are going to be very important moving forward, and we're going to have to learn, you know, how to live with this thing, because the reality is, as was shown with SARS when they tried to do vaccines for this, that it ended up in a lot of ways making the situation worse, because the body overreacted to such a harmful pathogen that it could recognize that it caused damage, and in some cases, permanent damage. Excuse me, take a little drink of water here. It's a long show today. We're trying to get a lot of information in quickly, so if I'm speaking a little more swiftly than I usually do, I would apologize for that, and just set it to 0.8 play speed or something, right? Okay, so we're going to talk, let's talk about the spread of this a little bit. So we now know a couple things, right? We know that the infectivity, according to this paper, is about triple what was being reported publicly. We also know that the period of incubation technically usually works faster, but often or occasionally can go longer, which is rendering the quarantine system not effective. And we can kind of look at what's happening here by looking at other countries that border China and what's happening. So I have an article here from the Bangkok Post. This was published today, actually, at earlier this morning. I again convert for the local time, but it looks like it was about 13 hours ago. So this is Vietnam, which shares a southern border with China, and they have quarantined their first area outside of China with 10,000 residents over the coronavirus. And presumably that's because of people coming across here. But there is villages of Vietnam with 10,000 people close to the nation's capital were placed into quarantine after 6 cases of the deadly new coronavirus were discovered there. And so we saw the locking down of the commune of Son Loi. Let's see what else is in here. The timeline is for 20 days. And so that's interesting that Vietnam is actually doing a 20-day quarantine as opposed to the 14 that we are seeing through the Western world and throughout Asia. North Korea, also, this is NCOV-19. This is coronavirus news. They're reporting this, and I've seen this in other sources. They're just putting the line out here. They are going to have a 30-day quarantine period, given that the studies have shown this 24-day period. That's another country. We have 59 cases. This is from CNN Philippines, reported of flu-like coronavirus. These are confirmed coronavirus. Excuse me. Confirmed coronavirus cases in the Philippines that show flu-like symptoms, 59 in the Philippines. That's going to be another disease vector. And like you said, like we said with this, so if that's 50, you know, then it's going to be 250. It's going to spread very quickly given this R-naught number, and they're not going to know. And this is a perfect example. This is from the CNN in the Philippines. So a total of 277 of the 455 contacts of one pair of people who were there were tracked down by government authorities. On the other hand, 246 out of 731 contacts of the elderly woman who went back to China were traced. So there are hundreds of people who are out there who could potentially be getting this. And what the disease health agencies are doing, the public health agencies, is they're trying to find everyone got in contact with. But that doesn't cover surfaces, that doesn't cover bathrooms, that doesn't cover casual, you know, intermittent contact. And God bless them for trying. I mean, but this is out of the bag. So if these are countries where we all see the numbers going up now into the high two digits, and which means that on the ground, considering that we know from other research, the long incubation period, the asymptomatic carriers, and the people who have light expression of the disease, that for every one person they find, I think we have to assume that there are approximately 4 or more they don't. And the problem is they're going to be spreading. So this is going to be a major problem. And we can see this actually. There's this great example, and let's do one other country actually first before we talk about that. We have a case from Thailand where they are claiming the cases are stable at 33. That's going to have another big border with China and a lot of people moving back and forth. Although, if you read through the comments section in this article, people are saying the government there is lying by an order or two of magnitude as well, where people know a number is sick with this. Now, part of this is panic, part of it's truth. This is fog of war, right? As with any other conflict, what happens is that there is a bunch of information you don't know. You see things happening, but you have to make estimations somewhere between what you can observe and what seems likely. So what is likely is that the worst estimations may not be true, but that these publicly pronounced ones are probably have data lag where we don't know what's out there. So there's probably now, I think we have to assume, 3 figures in cases in Japan, Thailand, the Philippines, I would say Singapore, and I would suspect, even though we're not getting a lot of reporting out of there, Malaysia, given their government's abilities and inabilities. And these are all countries that now have active transport going back and forth to much of the Western world and throughout. So it just demonstrates that unless you're willing to shut yourselves in, that shutting people out isn't going to work. And there was a really interesting speech. I posted it on our Facebook page, which I invite you to join at Coronavirus Central, where Senator Tom Cotton from Arkansas here in the United States was calling on the U.S. military to begin having a much more active plan for this, expecting a global pandemic, and in his words, saying that a Manhattan Project level effort will be needed. For those unaware, that's the size of the effort designed to create the first atomic weapons. So definitely, at least some people in the American government are taking this incredibly seriously, and the military was asked to provide a snap assessment upon the ability of countries in Africa and throughout the third world to offer ability to control this pandemic. And their assessment was, with a couple notable exceptions, including places that were heavily hit by Ebola previously, that they would struggle mightily in doing so, and that we won't have reporting. I mean, the test kits already being used in the West don't even work that well. So now we have these issues. And as such, despite the robust economic news, which is being driven by central bank spending, we see that there are two big areas that really indicate what the problems are going to be, and in terms of why this economy is going to slow down around us. And I don't want to hit this hard today, but I want to just mention it in passing so that you can see that there are these issues. Number one is that the airlines suspend China flights due to the coronavirus outbreak. This is from the Jakarta Post, and I'm just going to share the number of airlines that have canceled all China flights, okay? American Airlines, Air France, Air Seoul, Air Tanzania, Austrian Airlines, British Airways, Delta Airlines, Egypt Air, El Al, Finnair, Iberia, Kenya Airways, KLM, Lion Air, Oman, Qatar Airways, Rwandair, Nordic Airlines, Scoot, Singapore Airlines, United Airlines, and Vietnam Airlines. So all of these have suspended up through about the middle of March. Some of them have even gone further. Delta's gone to April 30th, and we see these extending further and further. So basically, things are not going to be coming in and out of China. People aren't going to come in and out, and we're going to see that there are these economic problems that go. And then there's a whole bunch of other flights that have gone ahead and canceled some of their flights, not all of them. Air Canada, Air New Zealand, it's a Cathay Pacific that's based out of Hong Kong, Emirates, Hainan, Philippines, Qantas, Royal Air, Russia, let's see, Singapore, UPS, they had some manufacturing closures, Virgin Atlantic, Virgin Australia. So a lot of cancellations happening. And what it means is the economy's kind of in the crapper. And so the other thing is, there's something called the Baltic Exchange Dry Index. You can look this up if you want to look it up at tradingeconomics.com/commodities/Baltic. What it basically says is the number of goods that are traveling between places. It lets you see how much world trade is happening. And from a peak in September of an index rating of 2530, this has dropped to 421 as of this moment. And what it measures is 23 goods that are hard physical assets that are moving back and forth around the world. And much of the global trade comes out of East Asia. So what we basically see is that there has been an 83% drop in the amount of produced goods traveling. And that number is continuing to plummet as we speak, because what's happening is, now that manufacturing in many places due to the quarantine is offline, that global travel is going to a halt, that we are seeing the breakdown of a global economic system. And as we talked about in the last episode, for those who didn't listen, that the real concern in this particular moment, beyond the financial implications, which is, we'll do a whole show on that about talking about debt bubbles and all that, but is that the medical supplies that come out of China, 97% of the world's of the antibiotics, 90% of generic prescription drug medications, large percentages, up over 80% of the actual goods, the raw chemical materials from which other countries like India, the second biggest producer, make these pharmaceuticals, are going to be offline. And we're going to experience this at the same time that there's a global pandemic. China is going to appropriate those goods to work for its own interest of its people, a totally understandable decision, but that we're going to have this huge problem, and it's going, you can see how the pieces connect and the civil unrest that might emerge from it. So definitely a tough situation, something to keep an eye on. And we're going to try to talk about the economics of this in the show. It's a little bit different what we cover. We're trying to look at not just understanding this virus, but understanding what this virus is going to do. And in a time when, you know, the markets and governments and media, for that matter, all deliberately counter-signaling to keep public confidence up and to suppress the worst of these figures. So we, having looked at all those local areas, I want to report also the first coronavirus death was reported in Japan. This was a Japanese woman in her 80s who was not on the ship docked near Tokyo. So despite the quarantine efforts for the Diamond Princess, we do know that this is now spreading in Japan as well. And we'll see how well the Japanese system can deal with that. Hopefully they're able to have some successes. Of course, we will pray for all those and for the deceased. So there's a lot there. And, you know, I wish there was better news. The only thing I can say is we're going to have to deal with this. The responsible public leadership position would be to shut down travel and to have people quarantine in their homes to help countries. We're just not going to do that for economic reasons. And I understand the civil unrest aspect of it, that people are not prepared to be able to be locked in their home for 14 days or 24 days or 30 days. But what I would say is that if you're not prepared now to deal with that level of disruption at a minimum, and I suspect given the number of people already sick, it may be longer than that, then we're going to have to deal with this rolling virus that's going to go through our whole population. And unfortunately, for those who are ill, that means that somewhere between, the low end 1% and the higher end 20% of people who, in the absence of the medical care they will need from an intensive care unit, will succumb to this disease may end up passing. And that's a really tough thing to contemplate. But this is a disease that has a sort of ferocious, wicked intelligence about it in terms of the fact that it knows how to spread without outing itself before it's ready to launch its ambush. And I think people need to be very aware of that. Afraid, maybe more important, respect for it. We very much believe in being proactive in preventing these problems. So if you can, I strongly suggest, as always, be washing your hands. Don't go out more than you need to. Protect your eyes, protect your mouth, and understand that, you know, you don't have to do a whole lot to get this virus. We're going to try to go in the coming days to give a little more economic analysis on this. We're going to try to get better knowledge. I've been asked by several people about the reinfectivity rate. There's not a lot out there, but I am looking. If you have questions or if you have information, let us know. I'll give you a hot rumor before I go that I've heard that there is a very large shipment of body bags being produced by a major U.S. manufacturer heading over to China. I wonder what they're for. Hopefully, you know, you want it to be a precaution rather than a needed item, but the evidence doesn't suggest that. So every show, I try to give you a tip about how to extend your ability to make it longer, 30 days, 60 days. And one of the things I wanted to share with you, and this is a little bit lighter, but and I'm just taking this from sunplay.com, which is you can purify water with pool shock. This is actually really great. And bleach, if you use bleach as a purification method, right? So we talk about preparedness occasionally, and I'll do more shows. Check out my book, Surviving Coronavirus, on any budget. It will help with this, and a lot of these good information is in there. But bleach goes bad after about 6 months, and we don't know how much is going to spread, how much is going to recur. Get pool shock. It's called pool shock. You go to a hardware store or you go like any of those. They have pool stores here. I don't know what you have in other countries. You would go and you get this stuff, and it's basically concentrated solid chemical bleach. You put a couple teaspoons in of it. Let's see. I want to make sure I give you the exact amount because there's very specific requirements about what it is. I want to say what it is here. So you want 1 gallon. You add 1 part of chlorine solution to 100 parts water. So it's one level teaspoon of pool shock that you're adding to 1 gallon. You want to do, you don't want to shake it, and that can help purify the water from viruses. You use that for cleaning. You can use that for drinking if you want, although you'll probably want to boil it first for, and I know the taste won't be the best, but hey, if it's what you got and you're stuck in an urban environment, it's not so bad. So it can last as long as you want. It offers you another opportunity, a solution in a hard time. I think it's definitely, and they say that it actually doesn't taste that bad. I haven't tried it yet, but I probably will, because that you always should practice your preps. That's like a basic thing in preparedness. And we don't want you to be afraid. We want you to be empowered. We want you to be able to survive. And I know a lot of people don't have a lot of means, and you won't be able to get access to resources. Remember your hierarchy of preparation. It's always going to be having a safe, secure shelter, being able to protect yourself, be able to offer security, even if that's a bad at something, if things go badly. You want to have a food supply. That's what you need to be focusing on now. Even if it's just rice and beans, that'll get you through the pinch. Access to clean water and a means of communication. One other thing I say is so important. Don't assume the internet's going to work. Even though you might end up with just public sources, it's not the best, but go ahead, get a little crank radio and some means to keep yourself connected to the world. As long as we can, we'll put that out there. Hopefully, all those things will not be necessary. It looks like the Chinese have been able to keep things up. We're expecting that in the West, as this evolves, we'll do the same. So I want to thank you, as always, for coming and listening to Coronavirus Central. We really appreciate you coming on the show. Links will be up for all the questions that are out there. Join us in the Telegram chat, t.me/Coronavirus Central. Please share this chat. Let other people know. The more people we can get, the better we're doing. If you can, if you're interested in getting the book, by the way, it's over at Amazon. It helps because that allows me to work full time on this. I very much want to do that because this is that important, and it will keep your family safe and alive. There's a lot of really good tips in there from decades worth of prepping. Beyond that, just we'll close as we always do with a prayer for the sick, for the dead, and for those who are out there fighting and responding to this. We ask that Lord take mercy on all of us and provide health, comfort, and safety to the families of the afflicted. So with all that, God bless. I'll see you tomorrow. Goodbye.